From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on July 8th on the Instagram page for Nike Golf. Nike posted a black and white photo of a golfer, his hand over his face, his caddy with his arm around him offering emotional support. The player's name is Matthew Wolf. He looked like he was in shock. He had just won his first tournament, and he said that it had changed his life. It's a stirring moment, expertly captured by a photojournalist named Alex Corman. Nike posted the caption, "We all dream it. Some just do it." But nowhere was Alex Corman's name mentioned. To state the obvious, he wasn't paid for the usage of his image. He wasn't even credited with having taken it. Corman jumped on Twitter and wrote, quote, "Hey, Nike, I'm an honest, hardworking photojournalist. You don't know me, but you posted a photo I worked extremely hard to get on your golf Instagram account with no credit. I went on to notice that your accounts never give credit. Beyond being illegal, it's just insulting and rude. Maybe consider having the common courtesy to take 5 seconds to add basic credit to the photographer who likely worked their butts off their entire lives to get to the point where they were in the right place with the right skills to take that picture. It's at no cost to your company, but can give that photographer an invaluable amount of exposure for their work and as a reward for the hard work to capture that image," end quote. Well, Nike has since added Corman's name as a credit. If you work in the so-called gig economy, you understand how often something like this seems to happen across different lines of work. Writers are asked if a magazine can publish their piece. They won't get paid. The exposure is supposed to be enough. Photographers often don't even get a basic credit, let alone money. Well, this hour, let's have a conversation about who deserves to get paid, or at least credited, for the work that they're doing. Our guests this hour include William Snyder, Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist and chair of the photojournalism program at RIT. Welcome back. Nice to have you.
Great to be here.
And on the line with us is Todd Bigelow, an independent photographer who has a long resume. Todd has contributed to 2 team Pulitzer Prizes, and his client lists include Time, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, The Smithsonian, New York Times Magazine, People, Newsweek. I mean, I could go on. I'm just going to stop there arbitrarily for now, Todd. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Very good. I know William, I know you know Todd.
Yep. We're buddies from a long time ago.
Well, I know you both have strong views on this. So let me just kind of start with this particular case, and then we're going to go wide on this because, boy, this is hardly the first time. It probably does not surprise you what happened to Corman. Do you think, William?
No, I'm not surprised at all. It happens all the time, and you know, there's this notion that if it's on the internet, it's for the taking. The thing that really irks me is that there are professionals out there, be they art directors or social media people or, you know, whatever they might be, that think that they can get away with this. And a lot of them don't even have, as this Nike person didn't, don't even have the politesse to give somebody a credit, much less contact them, ask them if they can use it and what the fee is. You can't tell me that Nike doesn't have the money to pay this guy for his picture.
Well, I don't know if they have any lawyers at Nike. I mean, they're just scraping by. It's like a small little house outlet there.
Yes.
Come on, William. You don't just pick on the small guys like Nike.
Yeah.
How are they supposed to know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, really. How are they supposed to know?
Well, and in this case, Todd, I assume no surprise to you either. You know, Alex is saying, he went on there. I mean, he sees this spreading around, and he's going, "My God, that's my image, and I don't even have a credit, let alone a contact." Like William said, no surprise to you, Todd?
No surprise at all. As William said, it happens so frequently as to become almost something that you know, when we see something where a photographer is bringing that to light in social media, it happens so frequently you almost scroll by them now, which is really unfortunate because it should never be viewed as acceptable. There's quite a few issues at play in these instances, which is dependent upon the social media platform. There's terms of service that not only the photographer has to agree to, but also those that are using the service have to agree to. So, and in addition to that, photographing a PGA Tour event, assuming that was a PGA Tour event, which I did for many, many years,
yep,
up until just a couple years ago for Sports Illustrated, and I'm quite familiar with the restrictions that are placed on the photographs, there are other legal issues involved with how Nike is using the image. If it could be construed as using the image commercially, they could be in violation of a exclusive contract that Getty Images actually has for the right to distribute images that will be used in a commercial nature. So there's a lot of issues at play here, the least of which is the photographer should have control of their work.
Yeah, and so I want to build on Todd's point there, because I think there's some larger issues at play for all of us. First of all, well, maybe not all of us, but a lot of people now, we don't want to pay for content. You know, I mean, we don't want to pay for the newspaper we want to read. We don't want to pay for a magazine subscription. We want them to post everything online. We certainly don't want to have to pay for a photograph if we want to use it for a publication of some kind, even an Instagram account. So I think that this goes to all of us and this culture that we've created where people expect not to have to pay for content, which I find to be a problem. But beyond that, many of us end up with, you know, moments where even if you're creating a personal website for you, for your business, for, I don't know, a blog, for anything, you may have questions about what you can legally use and what's sort of fair game, fair use. And we'll talk especially in depth about that in our second half hour, because this will apply to a lot of listeners. But I want to start with what Todd just said about Nike and Instagram, and I want to ask both Todd and William to weigh in on this. Has the advent of social media and the internet changed some of what we're seeing in terms of your work being kind of appropriated? I ask that because I don't know what Nike would say, Todd, but perhaps they would say, look, it was just our Instagram account. It wasn't an ad. It wasn't a billboard somewhere. It's an Instagram account. I mean, is that a fair defense to you? And do you think the advent of social media and the internet has changed things for you and your colleagues?
For me and my colleagues, the growth of the internet and social media, it was the single biggest impact on our profession in my lifetime. And I've been doing this for almost exactly 30 years now. I was just thinking about today. I've gone through the print to digital transformation, digital to video transformation, all of those things to stay relevant in the field. But no bigger impact has been the internet and social media, and that won't come as any surprise to anybody that's been in the profession. Most profoundly, Evan, most profoundly has been the wildfire that has erupted with unauthorized use because of the internet and social media, and this, as you mentioned, underlying issue of nobody really wants to pay for content, and the content seems to be available to everybody with just a click of a mouse. So let me just go, you know, find this image and just post it on my blog or post it on my Instagram feed. And to get, you know, right to your point, Instagram for a company like Nike or any big publisher or anybody with a lot of followers is pretty much their main tool of communication. Mm-hmm. So it is a really big deal.
Well, you know, for Nike to say, if they in fact said, but for them to say something like, well, it's just an Instagram feed. Well, I just pulled their account up. They have 90 million followers. I'm sorry. That's an ad. When you're putting something in front of 90 million people, that's an ad. You know, on a mediocre day and a mediocre picture, they're getting 43 million likes, you know, and another one, they're getting 176,000. They're getting...
you could never get those metrics on a television ad.
No, and they've got a view of a I don't know if this is Tiger or who this is, 1.1 million views of something. I'm sorry, these are ads, and they need to be paying for all of this content.
And if I could jump in on that point real quickly, William raises such a classic pertinent point, which is the metric that we have always set, we being freelance photographers and others that license content, and I do a lot of licensing of content. It's always based and always has been based on circulation numbers, to use kind of the traditional media reference. How big is your publication? If somebody comes to me and wants to license an image and they're a small publication in the Midwest, they're not going to pay the same fee as the New York Times. It's based on growth and visibility. And we have to, you know, we've had to adjust for this new metric that William brings up. If 87 million people are viewing it, the photographer even has a much greater, argument for receiving compensation, and not just exposure, because I'm not in the exposure compensation field. I can walk in and pay my mortgage.
But let me hit this point here, because before I grab a phone call from Jim in East Rochester, to both Todd and William, what's a fair rate for using a photo like that, that might go sort of what we would, sort of assume in the online sports world, it's kind of viral. It's a great image. I mean, it really is an outstanding image, captured a moment. It's probably, I assume the golfer is a Nike client, which is probably why they're trying to capitalize on him. And what's an appropriate rate here? Todd, I'll start with you. What should Nike have done? Should they have contacted the photographer first? What's an appropriate offer? How do you measure that?
Okay, so I've been in this exact boat. I did a shoot for Sports Illustrated a number of years ago. The winner jumped in the lake, a very famous picture. Later that evening, Rolex, who sponsored the winner, Lorena Ochoa at that time, contacted Sports Illustrated and was going to purchase the image for an advertisement. All the wheels were turning. At that time in 2007, it was going to be around 10 grand. We ended up not being able to complete that deal because, and this is a very important point and draws all of these other factors in, Sports Illustrated could not license that image. I could not license that image through Sports Illustrated as a copyright holder because that would be considered a commercial use, and Getty Images has the commercial rights to any images produced on the tour. So I wouldn't have had those rights. So Rolex ended up going to Getty and getting a similar picture from them. So there are a couple issues at play, but I never quote anything over the phone. I'll pull up the software that the industry basically uses, but I can say from my own experience from, I think that was 2007, it would have been a 10 grand license.
Okay, William?
Well, I don't do as much of this as Todd does, so I'll defer to him. But that sounds about right. I mean, if they're using images that pre-exist for commercial usage, advertising, you got to start somewhere in the five figures.
Now, let me grab Jim in East Rochester, who wants to weigh in on this kind of subject. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, Evan. I've been a graphic designer for 25 years, and this is a tricky landmine subject. What we did for years and years was we subscribed to a website called ThinkStock, and for different kind of artwork or images for putting together brochures and things like that. And what I tried to do during that time when I created something was using something that was royalty free. And what I did was pay a monthly fee for this service. And when I needed something, go on there. But there were some instances where people wanted certain images and I would have to go on there. And if they were, non-royalty free, pay for those. And a lot of questions they would ask is, what are you going to use this for? Is it going to be a major client?
Yep.
Or is it going to be a billboard? And the rate would fluctuate for, and even for the print media, they asked how many thousands of brochures are you going to produce? Is it just going to be 500 or is it going to be 10,000? And that would affect the price too. But I tried to steer away from that by using royalty-free images.
Jim, thanks for that. Is that all right with you, William?
Yeah, I mean, if there are photographers that want to put their images into those kind of banks, that's fine. I mean, Getty has in many ways created the optimum royalty-free service by not charging very much for the images that they sell. They can work on volume, and that really doesn't help the artist. One of the things I did want to say is I think the advent of all of this began with music. I think when music went digital, there was always this thing of tape recorders and all of that, and people used to get upset about it, but with the advent of digital, and then digital distribution over the internet, people began to get the notion of, oh, it's out there, it's free, you know, I don't have to pay for it. We all know what happened with Napster and how that went, and now we have these services, you know, iTunes and Rhapsody and all of this other stuff. You know, to me, Getty is sort of the visual version of those things. The thing being is that, you know, at least Getty hires photographers and puts some money back into the business. People like iTunes and Rhapsody and all whoever else is out there, they don't put anything back into the business. They don't do anything to help, you know, beginning artists. And I think that's sort of the beginning of where this notion of free began, was with music, and then we went from there.
I think that's a really interesting point. I mean, I was a college student when Napster was around, and I remember about a year after Napster's out, we were finding all this great, we thought great stuff on Napster. You know, I was a knucklehead college student, right? And I had a friend say, if you keep Napster on your computer, the FBI is going to come after you. Now, remember, I'm not a very smart person, and I clearly didn't hang out with very smart people, but they were convinced of it, so I deleted it. And it turned out that whoever was in charge was trying to figure out ways to not just have content spread for free. But I think that Napster mentality stuck with a lot of people in my generation. It stuck with a lot of people when it comes to newspapers and now the usage of images. You know, years ago when I was putting images up on a news website, I was just Googling images. And I thought, well, I could just throw this up there. And I did that for about 5 seconds before somebody said, think about this. And I thought about it. And I thought, oh, my gosh, we got to be very careful with what we're doing, to respect the photographers, to respect copyright, to understand what we're putting out there. And now we're very, very careful, even when we're posting images for WXXI. But here's what I'm worried about. I want to ask Todd and William this. I mean, you know, my son's 7. If he came to me and said, I want to be a photojournalist, I don't know, Todd. I mean, would you say, yeah, great idea, because nobody wants to pay you for your work. You can work your backside off for years, be the best in your craft, grab the most remarkable image, and even major corporations aren't smart enough to give you a simple credit, let alone money. I don't mean to be so cynical, Todd, but I mean, that's a hard road.
It is a hard road, Evan, and I don't see it as cynicism as much as I do reality. And, you know, I've been pretty vocal in our profession that I think we need to raise these issues a little bit more with a little bit more staunchness to it. We need to make sure that the students that are coming out of our universities are not only well prepared with their skills, and I can certainly vouch, having looked at a lot of portfolios for those coming out of Williams program and Syracuse and a host of others. These are some really talented photographers, really, really talented. We need to make sure that they understand that the profession is one in which it is a freelance dominated profession. You have to understand the issues that you'll face on almost a daily basis. And this is one of those issues. Can you really make a viable living, perhaps even have a family in this current state of transformation, which we're going through, which is newspaper staffs are continue to downsize. So there's you know, very little staff employment to speak of, especially when you look back in comparison over the last few years. Magazine staffs are almost unheard of now. Sports Illustrated laid off the last of theirs 4 years ago. So what I tell my students as an adjunct is to be prepared for an uphill battle. But having said that, it really reminds me of when I came out of journalism school, which is we really don't get into it to make a living. I mean, to make a good living, we need to make a living, but we don't get into it, you know, to really go out and make six figures, you know, 5 years out of school. It's not going to happen. But it's a little bit more of a plow now than it was 25, 30 years ago. Would I advise my son who's in graduate school now to be a photographer? Quite frankly, no. But if he said, this is what I really want to do, I want to use my camera and expose some injustices of the world, my own community, highlight, you know, the beautiful things in my own community, do the things that photojournalists really do, which is why we get into the profession, then I'd really get behind them and say, do the best you can.
William Snyder, I saw the look on your face when I mentioned I was in college when Napster came around. It was the look on this look of just this whippersnapper is what you were thinking. You want to call me a whippersnapper? Go ahead.
Oh, probably worse than that. But no, I mean,
what do you tell students? I mean, you're the chair of the program at RIT.
What I tell students is this: I tell students that it's a tough row to hoe. You've got to believe in what you want to do. It's very, 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 very competitive. Part of me kind of doesn't mind that it's this way for right now, because there's an awful lot of people in this business, and Todd knows roughly who I'm talking about. There's an awful lot of people in this business that shouldn't be in this business. They've managed to get away, and sort of, you know, they're maybe better business people than they are photographers, and so they've sort of... they've raised the bar for money, but they've lowered the bar on quality and storytelling and ethics and a whole nine yards. So there's that part of me, you know, as this old grumpy guy that's like, fine, let those people go away. But the other thing is that, you know, we could never, unless you were a staff photographer, as a freelancer, people could never make a really good living just shooting photojournalism, documentary work. I mean, some of the greatest photographers that we've known, photojournalists that we've known, supplemented everything that they did with commercial work. There is this notion that, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm just going to make a living doing the right thing. Well, it's never been that way. Not really. There's a handful of people maybe in the 90s that could do it working for Time Magazine and Newsweek and Paris Match. But it was a handful. RIT graduate Bruce Davidson, one of the greatest documentary photojournalists in the world, was an amazing lighter and made a really good living doing commercial work. And those names go on and on and on. So that's what I tell them. You're going to have to learn how to do these other things. I mean, think about some of the greatest artists in the history of the world, painters and such. And they worked, you know, they worked for corporations, you know, the church. We wouldn't have the Sistine Chapel if it wasn't for the church. We wouldn't have a lot of great artwork if it wasn't for corporate sponsorship, per se. So I think people have to, you know, that's what I tell students. You can do this work. It's hard work. And you're not compromising your ethics by going off and doing commercial work, but you have to do it that way. And so
that is really key. William, but that is, you know, we're preaching the same thing on different coasts here. And Evan, what William is saying is so key to new photographers coming out of school and trying to find their way. In my courses, I teach them, and because it's what I live by, that 12 and 13 years ago, I would get $110.99 from Time Inc. for all the magazines I was shooting for, and that was okay in of itself for a decent middle class living. Then you supplement a little bit here and there, and you're getting by. So that was about 80% of my income. 12, 13 years ago was editorial. That's flipped now. I would say editorial comprises about 15% of my income now. Now it's foundations, licensing, workshops, adjunct teaching, assignment work for corporations. So what William says is absolutely the key to success coming out of school and pushing into this field.
Yeah, go ahead, William.
For example, there's a young man, Mike Bradley, here in Rochester, great photographer. So if you're out there looking for a great photographer, Mike Bradley is who you want. But when he first came out, he was doing when he first became a freelancer here in town, he said that he was doing both stills and video work, and 75% of his work came from stills, but 25% of his income came from stills. 25% of his work came from video. 75% of his income came from video. And so you can see where those things are changing. And, you know, for financial reasons, he's spending more time shooting videos, but he still does work for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and other places like that, living up in this area. And that's the way it has to be done, depending upon where you live.
So let me close with Todd, and then we're going to bring in David Miranda, an intellectual property attorney, in our second half hour. But Todd, you know, when I look at your resume and the work that you've done for Time, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, Smithsonian, New York Times Magazine. I mean, it's a long, long list. I don't know how many of those organizations would tell a photographer today, hey, look, we're not going to pay you, but isn't it good exposure? You know, we'll use you, we'll give you credit, but no money. You know, we opened the hour with this conversation about this photographer, Alex Korman, whose work shows up on Nike's Instagram page, which could have millions of eyes on it. They didn't so much as give him a credit, and he did tweet, hey, you could have at least given a credit, which can be an invaluable amount of exposure for a photographer for their work, and a reward for that kind of photographer. This is where people kind of split sometimes, Todd. This is where some people say, look, don't just give me a credit. You know, if I'm a journalist and I wrote a piece and your magazine wants to use it, don't just say, well, we're going to give you a byline. I can't pay you, but isn't that good exposure? And if you're a photojournalist, don't just say we're going to run your image, but we'll give you a credit, but we can't pay you, because that's work. You should pay for work. Whereas others will say, look, if you're going to not use it at all, use it and credit me, that's still good for me. Where do you kind of come down on that, the exposure being valuable thing?
Great question, Evan. First, let me make sure it's super clear. All of the publications that you mentioned that I was, you know, blessed and fortunate to work with on a freelance basis, they all pay. So when they call you, that's assignment work. I was being hired for assignment work. So they would call you up and they would ask you, can you go to Texas to shoot along the border? And here's our rate, or it was understood what the rate was. But none of those mainstream publications ever asked me to work for free. Having said that, I have been asked not only to work for free, but to provide my images to third parties, mostly. I get a lot of free requests, including I had a request for free use. They claimed they didn't have a budget from the Food Network for the Great Amazing Food Truck Race. Wanted to use one of my images to wrap one of the trucks to promote one of their team contestants. This is a Food Network, and they told me they had no budget. So, you know, I get a lot of requests like that. I'll be perfectly clear and succinct on what I think about the exposure compensation model. And I, you know, the photographers will understand the terminology there. Exposure compensation is actually a technical term, but as far as it goes for what we're talking about these days, it is just a myth. It's a myth because there's so much digital noise out there. For you to really watch your career just absolutely take off because an image appears in somebody's social media feed, yeah, I might win the mega lottery too. There's a chance I will, you know, but it's such a small chance that you can't build a business model around that. Now, I tell my students this, I understand exposure. Exposure is important. We need to, like, understand it and use it to create and find new revenue streams, to find new clients and so forth. And that's where we want to take advantage of what social media offers to us and the internet. But please, for your own sake, don't just hand your images out there. I had a request from a Boston-based nonprofit a couple years ago. I show this in my workshop. You can look up a nonprofit's tax status, look at their tax return by just Googling the name of the nonprofit and Form 990, IRS Form 990. Within 3 minutes, I will be looking at an entire tax. They had $60 million in annual revenue, offices in Boston and D.C., and they wanted an image to use for free. It's just not going to happen. They're paying boards of directors six figures, you know, seven or eight people. I can't walk in, Evan, and pay my mortgage at my credit union with an Instagram post. I can't pay my utility bills with an Instagram post. I can't pay my car insurance. I understand that there's a potential for people discovering you, but are they going to discover you and ask you to work for free again? It's a business. We need to make money. So I don't believe that exposure is a realistic method of compensation. And if you went into a business school and asked that, you know, pick a business school, Wharton School of Business, you go in there and ask them if that is a viable way to build a business, and I'd be willing to bet they'd say no.
William Snyder, what do you think?
Well, I mean, there's not only that. I mean, yeah. That doesn't this visibility thing doesn't do anything for you. It really doesn't. You know, and to add to what Todd's talking about basic expenses for adults to live. But what everybody seems to forget is everything that goes into being a photographer, even a low-level photographer. You know, a decent mid-range DSLR body alone is going to cost you anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500. A basic lens, one lens for that, it's going to cost you $500, all the way up, depending upon what you do, all the way up to $10,000 or $12,000. Then there's computers. Then there's storage. There's monitors. There's education. Amen. There's every other piece of equipment that you have. There's experience. All of those things are overhead, and they all cost money. And getting $25 or a credit doesn't help pay for those things. And, you know, and my response is always, fine, go do it somewhere else. You know, go find somebody that'll do it for $25, and you're not going to be happy. You know, part of the thing now is, in some ways, we're going through what sort of the design business our first caller belongs to, where, you know, when desktop computers first came out, what happened? All these corporations got rid of all their designers in the design firms because they figured they could just have their assistants design things for them. And over time, they began to understand that they can't do that. They're not trained to do it. They don't understand how to do it. And they can't do it on demand. They might do something really nice, you know, if they've been tinkering with it forever. But if you need something tomorrow by 2 o'clock, you need to talk to a pro. If you need something covered day in and day out, you need to call a pro. If you have to have images that are worthy of putting up in front of millions of people, you have to call a pro. Will there be people that occasionally make good pictures? Absolutely. We see it every day on Instagram and with cell phones. But those are people that luck into pictures and maybe take a few nice ones. They aren't people that you can call on to do something, you know, on demand, and with a certain amount of quality guarantee. And so, no, you got to pay for it. That's the bottom line. You have to pay for it. And, I mean, it's the same thing. People want to get wedding photographers, for example. I mean, you know, they're looking for $200 and $300 wedding photographers, and then they get the pictures back, and they're not happy. And it's like, well, you know, you get what you pay for. You may not think that $5,000 wedding photographer is worth it, but that's supposedly one of the most important days of your life. Do you really want to leave it to Aunt Joan with her, you know, with her cell phone and maybe, you know, her old Instamatic camera?
No. Can I jump in on that?
Yeah.
It's my 30th anniversary today. So shout out to my lovely wife who's been with me from the beginning of this freelance and staff journey. But it's true. It's the most important day of your life. And, yeah, you're going to have to pay for a good photographer.
Well, Todd, listen, we've been honored to have you as a photographer, an award-winning photographer, and someone who has a lot to say in a lot of different classrooms and newsrooms. Thanks for sharing your insight and expertise with us this hour.
Thank you, Evan. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Todd Bigelow.
Thanks, Todd.
A photojournalist joining us. After this only break of the hour, we're going to bring in David Miranda, who's an intellectual property attorney. And I'm going to ask him, what does he think it was like inside Nike when they see the photographer publicly ranting about them not properly crediting him? Nike does, it turns out, have attorneys. And I wonder if they were a little worried about that because maybe it was just a young 20-something doing their Instagram account. But we're going to talk about what's legal and what's not, fair use and not, and some interesting feedback from listeners on how this conversation is changing minds already on that. So let's get that break and come right back on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Chris writes to us on Twitter and says, we deal with this concept all the time in the craft beer industry. People die of exposure, pay people for their products and work. I like that idea. People die of exposure, William Snyder.
That's right. I love that. Which beer company is this? I'm going to patronize them.
Where is Chris? I should know Chris. I mean, Chris is in the industry, and he's usually correcting me when I'm wrong on the air with some. And I'm not just joking about that, Chris. He's one of our very smart listeners. But Chris, send us a note on where you are, because I think what he's really saying is, in the wine industry, people say, "Well, will you donate some wine to this event here? It'll get your label out there. People will see it." Well, we can't pay you for it. Same thing in the craft beer industry. Same thing in photojournalism. Same thing in journalism. It's
everybody wants something for nothing.
Everybody wants something for nothing.
And what I will tell you is this. What I have come to understand is that people with the most money expect things for free. I'm not going to tell you who. I'm not going to tell you who, but I have a there's a big time producer who wants some more of my pictures and has been kind of relentless about getting them. And I know he wants them for nothing. He wants files so he can print them up himself. And we're going to have a conversation this week. I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it, but we're going to have a conversation this week about, hey, you know, that's not going to happen. You know, you make plenty of money. You can afford this. What I need from you is a pittance. Consider it, you know.
Well, let's bring in David Miranda, who's on the line with us, an intellectual property attorney with Heslin, Rothenberg, Farley, and Macedi. And David, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
Thank you, Evan. I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm gonna ask you to kind of answer a mildly unfair question, but I'll start with this, because our listeners know that we opened the hour with the story of photojournalist Alex Korman, who took a picture of Matthew Wolf, who was a young golfer who won his first PGA Tour tournament unexpectedly. He buried an eagle putt on the last hole, a long putt to win, and his reaction was very emotional. So Alex Korman gets this great image, and Matthew Wolf is a player with some Nike equipment. And so Nike grabs that image, they stick it on their Instagram, and they put, "We all dream it, some just do it." And, you know, they get tens and tens of thousands of reshares and likes and everything that's on Instagram that I don't even know, because I'm barely on Instagram myself. But it was a very successful image to be shared for Nike. Korman sees that not only they didn't pay him, they didn't ask permission, they didn't even credit him. And he jumps on Twitter and says, "I'm an honest, hardworking photojournalist. You don't know me, Nike. You posted a photo I worked extremely hard to get on your golf Instagram account with no credit. And I went on to notice that your accounts never give credit. Beyond being illegal, it's just insulting and rude." So I want to ask you right out of the gate, David, what do you think it was like inside Nike? I mean, you think their attorneys were saying, "Hey, what do we do about this?" I mean, you know, was there any kind of concern over that?
Well, first of all, I'm going to comment on what you guys were talking about before.
Yeah.
You know, everyone wants free legal advice, too.
So,
trust me, I could be very busy if I was going to give out free legal
free
advice.
Free everything,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this. You know, when you're talking about infringement, it's very factual intensive. And this Alex Korman, I don't think, claimed infringement. He just wanted credit. And there was another posting, I think, on his site where he said that he believed that possibly Nike had licensed that image from Getty Images. So, you know, when you are a photographer, sometimes you enter into arrangements with licensing agents, which is, you know, as your prior speakers were talking about, you know, you need to make a living. And it's possible that in this case, the image was licensed, and perhaps this gentleman had an arrangement with another licensing agent and just wanted credit. And, you know, for artists, I know it doesn't pay the bills, but credit is obviously extremely important. They take pride in their work, and it seemed that this gentleman was really concerned about the credit, because it was a great picture and obviously very popular, and you know, you can understand why they want credit.
Absolutely. David, you know, you might have heard me mention that back in my college days, I was warned to get Napster off my computer or the FBI was going to show up. Can you confirm that the FBI would not have come to my college apartment?
I cannot confirm or deny that. In fact, I've had, you know, I've received calls from college students and said, you know, I've just got named in this lawsuit. You know, what do I do? And, you know, they're panic stricken. And so it's a little bit, you know, I think the whole Napster issue has been resolved a little bit, because the music industry corrected itself. It found a way to make money off of digital transfer of recordings. And, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of time. Sometimes the technology is ahead of the business and ahead of the law.
Well, you know, sometimes the technology also screws us over. I'll give you an example. There's I haven't really tested it out with Instagram, but I know that some of the sharing sites and some of the, you know, I forget what they were called. I think they're defunct now. But anyway, Flickster or things like that. Sometimes when you put stuff up there, I mean, I try to be very conscientious about putting my IPTC information in there and have my metadata and, you know, where you can reach me and all of that. And I find that some of these online firms, they strip it all out. you know, and then that makes it even worse, because once they strip it out, then somebody downloads it from them, and then they're off to the races with an image. And they can, you know, these people can say, well, we tried, but there's no information attached to the picture, so we didn't know how to get a hold of you. So right. That's an out, which really annoys me.
Is there any recourse to that, David?
And
go ahead.
In those instances, the person that used it really is somewhat innocent in not really even knowing that, you or someone else was the actual owner of the works. And so it would be the intervening entity that would really be the wrongdoer there.
Well, you know, that's one reason I've gone to, you know, and I've had fans that have complained about it, but I've gone just about every image I put up now, I put a watermark on it. And people
right.
complain about it, but, you know, I have to do it. A guy I work with was also said, you know, put it sort of on the edge of the frame, because then if they crop it off, then you can, and you're a lawyer, you can tell me if this is true, then you can say, well, they went out of their way to get rid of the identifying information and altered the image. So
yeah, well, you know, I mean, the only people that are complaining about a watermark are people that want to use it without paying you. So
exactly.
You know, so you can put it wherever you want. You know, we'll see, for example, in computers, in software, you'll have source code.
Yep.
And, you know, the source, once you put the source code out there, anyone can take it and reuse it. And it's still, that's creative work that can be protected by copyright as well. You'll see, though, in source code that the code writers will sometimes put in, you know, a little bit of a red herring, something that's not necessary, and that if someone were to copy it and use it and say, well, this is the only way you can use this kind of, create this kind of app, there's this red herring, a sentence in there that has no meaning. And so the only way you could have come up with that idea and that application would be if you, you know, stole it from someone else's source code.
Yeah.
So there's things that you can do, and obviously, most people that are, you know, engaging in infringement, you know, they don't care. They understand what they're doing. And if they just need to crop something out, they'll do it. It doesn't mean it's not infringing, and it doesn't mean you don't have rights to whatever work you've created.
Well, how about this? I'm gonna out myself right now. I'm going to read an email from Tom who says, Evan, interesting topic about compensation for intellectual property. All artists should be compensated for use of their work, even if it's just, say, an on-air acknowledgement of one's theme song. I don't do it enough. And I'm gonna say, Tom, you're right. I'm glad you keep hitting me for this. Listeners, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know the music. Rob, can you hit the music? Can you do that? Let's listen to the music for a second. This is a Connections song, right? It's a Rah Rah Riot song. That's the band, Rah Rah Riot. They're awesome. And they have got local ties. Tom's from Geneva. He's the father of one of the band members with Geneva ties. I think they went to Syracuse University. And when I took over the program, I had a call out to try to get them to come join us. Now, they're doing it. They're still doing it. So everybody should basically be actually buying the records of Rah Rah Riot. I should be saying this from the rooftops. But I'm also thanking Barsook Records for saying yes when we asked to use the music. Yes, saying, hey, I'll say Barsook and I'll say Rah Rah Riot, and that's good for exposure. I'm as guilty as anybody.
Well, no, you're not, though, because
Ethically, I am.
You called them and asked for permission.
Yeah, but you know what, though?
And they gave it to you, and others might just say, hey, you know what? I really like this song. I'm going to use it. And that happens.
Well, maybe I'm covered legally, David. Maybe as my attorney, you're saying, hey, you're covered. I'm saying ethically, you know, I still feel a little squishy about it, and Tom's right to call me out. So anyway, please, everyone. The song is called Shadow Casting. It's an actual song. You should put it on your list. You should pay for it. And then, Tom, I'm going to renew the call. Let's get Rah Rah Riot on the program, because I want to sit, not as compensation to them, but because they're an awesome band with local ties and we ought to sit down and talk. But I'm glad to hear at least we're covered legally here, David. It does sound...
Well, I mean, I'm based upon what you've told me, you did ask for their permission.
No, we got the thumbs up, but I could do better at least crediting Barsook and Rah Rah Riot. Now, Andy writes to us to say, I feel that if a company wants to repost one of my Instagram images on their IG, they should ask permission. I don't expect payment. However, if they're going to use it in marketing for profit, compensation should be considered. Having said that, listening to this conversation, it's making me reconsider my position. I hadn't considered big companies using Instagram as a primary means of marketing, William Snyder. So, yeah, they're using Instagram as a primary means of marketing. It's happening.
Well, first of all, if you don't want someone to repost something without your authorization, A, you should block your account so that the only people that access your account are those that you accept. And you need to have a statement on there that indicates you're not allowed to, you know, repost anything from that person's account. I mean, I think there's a certain, I mean, I'm an intellectual property lawyer. I protect people's rights in their creative work. But you have to understand there is an assumption on social media that things are going to be retweeted. And that's the whole point, I think, of the whole medium. There's a difference, though, between retweeting someone else's post, which is providing them credit, and taking someone's picture that they posted mm-hmm. and posting it as your own. Certainly, that is a completely different situation.
So let me ask a question from a listener. Catherine says, Evan, please ask your guests about fair use for education. I've paid for photos for a public blog, but sometimes I've used photos with just credit in the classroom for presentations, no handout or copies. I want to make sure I understand the law as it pertains to teachers. David Miranda?
Yeah, well, if it's for a bona fide teaching purpose, there are some exceptions to the copyright law. You can, it depends on the nature of the content. So if it's kind of factual related content, like a newspaper story, if you want to just talk about a newspaper story in a classroom, the nature of the use, if it is actually in the classroom, the amount of the use, if you're taking a snippet or if you're taking like an entire book, and the impact on the owner commercially is probably the most important. So if you're talking about a book in class and you pull a paragraph out, that's probably not going to stop people from buying the book. Or same thing with a picture. That's not going to stop someone from buying a painting that they might otherwise put on the wall. But just because you're saying, I'm educating people and I'm making money off of it, that doesn't necessarily get you into the fair use doctrine. So It's very factual intensive. If you are truly an educator, and this is truly for educational purposes, and you take just what you need for the purposes of education, then as a teacher, then yes. But just because you're a teacher doesn't mean you have unlimited access to people's works, and you can do whatever you want with it.
David, 90 seconds for anybody who's had to create a website for themselves, for their company, for any entity that they're working with. If they just Google images and they don't check for whether there is sort of allowable use, and they use a photojournalist or a photographer's image without asking permission, what are the kinds of consequences that could come their way if they're not careful?
Well, you're likely to get contacted by either an attorney or an agent for whoever you took the photographs from. And trust me, the people that are involved in this commercially, and you just had, you know, guests that were on and involved commercially, there's measures that they can take to enforce their rights. You just like you can Google a word, you can Google a photo. And if you're a photographer, you can take your photograph and do a search for where your photograph is appearing. And then if someone is using it without a license, you can, reach out to them for proper compensation. And if they don't want to provide it, you have the ability to bring copyright litigation lawsuits.
Is ignorance an excuse?
Not in copyright law.
Not in copyright law.
Although if, there is a willfulness doctrine where you can get increased damages. And if it was really done in good faith, and you used it in good faith, like the instance where you licensed it from someone and, you thought that they indicated that they had the rights to it and then you licensed it from them, then that wouldn't be a willful infringement. It would be a good faith use that perhaps wouldn't get you in as much trouble. But just mere ignorance is not enough. There has to be some basis for it.
David Miranda is an intellectual property attorney with Heslin, Rothenberg, Farley, and Macedi. Thank you for taking the time, David. Great to have your expertise.
My pleasure. Anytime. Good luck to you.
William Snyder, 30 seconds to you. What is the message on behalf of all the working photographers and photojournalists as you continue to seek to make a living?
The short version is pay for it. Just pay for it, at least, and ask about it. If you see an image that you want to use for anything, ask. At the very least, give them credit, but ask. Most of us are pretty thoughtful when it comes to appropriate places. But if you've got money behind you, if you're in a position where you're getting paid and everybody else is getting paid and you want to come to me and ask me to give it to you for free, think about that.
William Snyder is the Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist, four times, by the way, chair of the photojournalism program at RIT. Always good to have you.
Thank you. It's always great to be here.
Our thanks to Todd Bigelow, David Miranda joining us earlier this hour, David Griffin volunteering, Gary Puttup helping behind the glass, Megan Mack is the producer, Rob Braden is the engineer. The Connections theme music is provided by Ra Ra Riot and Barsook Records. Ra Ra Riot and the song is Shadow Casting. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a beautiful afternoon wherever you are. We're back to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.